I'm Kristen Pleasanton, Deputy Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. With me in the studio is Alan Jordan, Executive Director of the Delaware Symphony Orchestra. Alan, welcome to Delaware State of the Arts.
Thank you so much, Kristen.
I know you're new to Delaware, and music has obviously been a big part of your life. So I'd like you just to talk a little bit about your own background in the field.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm actually originally from South Jersey, about 45 miles upriver. I grew up really literally one block away from the Delaware River. But my family moved to Vermont, northern Vermont, when we were in high school. Spent a couple of years in Vermont and then went off to the New England Conservatory of Music, where I received a bachelor's degree in music. Spent another 4 years there working at the conservatory and spending summers working at the Tanglewood Music Center for the Boston Symphony before I took my first full-time orchestra job, and that was with the Brevard Symphony in Melbourne, Florida, Brevard County, on the Space Coast. So we were near the Kennedy Space Center and Cocoa Beach and Satellite Beach and all those things. And I was there for 5 years, where I started in production and then was named general manager after my first year. After 5 years, an opportunity came up with the New Hampshire Symphony, and we relocated to New England and spent 7 years in New Hampshire, again, starting in production and operations and then moving to the general manager position. And then the Vermont Symphony Orchestra came calling, and I was hired directly into the executive director position there. And I was there for over 16 years.
Oh, wow.
Before the position here in Delaware became open, and it seemed like the right time to make another move. And so I guess it's been a real loop.
Yeah.
And finally back almost to where it started.
And you have obviously a lot of experience with symphonies. And was there anything in particular about the Delaware Symphony that sort of intrigued you or made you want to come take the helm?
Well, if you noticed, three of the four orchestras that I've been affiliated with have state names. And certainly the Vermont Symphony Orchestra was truly a statewide orchestra. It only did about 20% of its concerts in what they called its home base of Burlington. And the rest of the time, they were on the road. They did educational outreach programs that reached about half of the K through middle school students in the entire state every year. And the Delaware Symphony, like the Vermont Symphony, has a history of being a statewide orchestra. We'll probably talk in a little bit about, you know, some of the challenges that the symphony has had in recent years. But it seems as though everyone involved with the orchestra is looking to have this orchestra become much more a Delaware symphony and not just a Wilmington, Newcastle orchestra. So that appealed to me a lot, the idea of being statewide, of working in a number of communities, in bringing a number of different kinds of programs around the state. And it's very appealing because Delaware is only about a quarter of the size of Vermont, and it has a much better infrastructure for moving an orchestra around in. So I'm really thrilled about that. The orchestra has a great reputation. It's very old. The orchestra really is 110 years old this season. So it's been around for a long time. It has a great story to tell and one that continues to be written every day. And so I'm very excited about joining this group.
And I'm sure you found a very dedicated board and a core audience that was really faithful to the symphony.
Absolutely. Again, they had what a lot of organizations post-recession had, and that was a near-death experience. And so there was a huge amount of turnover. This happened back in 2012, and there was a huge amount of turnover. The board, I think all but one person is new since like 2011, 2012. So they've had a real change there in volunteer leadership. This group is unbelievably enthusiastic and dedicated and generous and supportive of the symphony. They realize that they've got a big job ahead of them. I'm also very impressed by how young this board is. There's probably a third of them, actually probably more than a third of them, have children at home that are preteen age. And I compare that to my last organization where I think two of the board members were actually employed and the rest of them were retirees. Mm-hmm. So very different dynamic. This is a board that is thinking about, bringing their generation in as the next audience. And it's really right. exciting.
Right. That's a really good way to be. Mm-hmm. You've touched on a few of the challenges, and actually, I'm sure symphonies across the country are experiencing these same ones. Mm. And some of your specific goals, if we want to get a little more specific, maybe related to audience diversification, which
sure.
I know that was a topic that you shared with the News Journal recently. Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's interesting. It's as much a perception issue, I think, as mm-hmm. anything else. It's a shame that a lot of people hear about a symphony orchestra, and if they haven't had experiences with it, it's not for me. It's mm-hmm. for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that. I think Beethoven can be relevant to anybody mm-hmm. These days. It has been for the past 200 plus years, so I think it still can be. It's just a matter of breaking down those perceived barriers to attendance. And some of them we've created, and they're real, and others are perceived. It's mm-hmm. not for me. Mm-hmm. We're going to be working in the Delaware Symphony to change our pricing structure so that there are various price points. People who want to have wonderful seats and are willing to pay top dollar, we welcome them to continue to do that. But we're going to have entry-level pricing that's going to be much more broad-based. My position is always we shouldn't have a ticket. The low ticket shouldn't cost much more than attending a movie.
Oh, great.
So uh-huh. we're going to be working in that direction. We're spending some time looking at venues because right now the orchestra, after the turn back, the crisis of mm-hmm. a few years ago, mm-hmm. The orchestra really just shrunk back to its core offerings of five classical orchestral programs and four chamber programs. And so what they did away with all their education programming. They did away with pops concerts. They did away with family concerts, holiday programs, all these things. Mm-hmm. They just felt they had to pare down to the bone. And so I'm not saying that we're going to be able to jump right back in and get all those things happening quickly, but we are going to be strategic in determining which of those programs make the most sense to bring back. Mm-hmm. They did already restart the education programs, and I'm glad for that, and I think we're going to see a lot of growth there mm-hmm. in the next few years, mm-hmm. Both growth here in the Newcastle area, but geographically across mm-hmm. the state. I think that's something that we are able to take far afield much more easily than if we have to take an 85-piece orchestra
to
do pictures at an exhibition or something.
What are some of the venues that the entire orchestra can fit in Delaware?
That's a real challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm still learning. I have to say the number of times I've been, south of the canal has been, one could be counted on one hand. I did visit the Schwartz Center mm-hmm. In Dover, which is a charming facility, but not a place where you can put 85 musicians.
Mm-hmm.
It would certainly work for some of our chamber programs. Mm-hmm. We are doing our Explorer concerts this March, performance in Milford at the high school and then at the Schwartz Center. But that's going to be just 16 musicians. So that works.
Mm-hmm.
But to bring the full orchestra, I understand in Dover that the high school has recently been named an arts magnet school.
Yes.
And that they have recently renovated the facility there. I've yet to see it, but I'm excited to get down there and take a look at that. We also understand that Cape Henlopen mm-hmm. High School mm-hmm. has a marvelous facility that's fairly large. And, a facility not only has to have a big stage, but it has to have ample audience seating so that, financially you can make it work. We're also, there have been places elsewhere in the state where the symphony has maybe done outdoor concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that we are very actively pursuing. It involves not just taking the orchestra around, but usually a tent and a stage and sound and lights and electricity and all that fun stuff. But that's just a completely different experience than you get if you come to the Grand or the Tattnall School for one of the traditional programs.
Right. And I guess in some ways it could be less intimidating for those audiences that have never attended before.
You know, the thing about symphony orchestras is that they can't afford to just have one audience.
Mm-hmm.
They have an audience that's their core classical audience. They have a pops audience. If they do holiday programs, you very likely will only see a lot of those audience members once a year.
Mm-hmm.
The same with, you know, if you do a 4th of July concert, it's part of their tradition, and they do that, and they think they've done their symphony thing for the year. So it's really important for us to work to build many audiences. The crossover factor, if you get crossover, it's great. It's like gravy.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you have to work. You have the family audiences. You have the school audiences, mm-hmm. the student audiences. And the idea is to offer several entry points for people so they have an opportunity to experience the symphony. I think symphony marketing ends up using the long tail theory of marketing, which is, you know, you just have to hope if you plant the seed, you know, at a certain point within the next 20 or 30 years, they'll come back, they'll enjoy it, they'll get more roped into the experience, and then they'll become a core patron
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to take a moment and to remind our listeners that you're tuned into News Radio, 1450 WILM. And 1410 WDOV for Delaware State of the Arts. Today, I'm talking with Alan Jordan. He's the executive director of the Delaware Symphony. And been talking a little bit about outreach and reaching new audiences and taking the symphony statewide through Delaware. And I'd also like to talk about your programming coming up and for the season and where people can find out about it as well.
Sure. Well, certainly we have a website, which is www.delawaresymphony.org. We also, our offices are in Wilmington, downtown, right on 10th Street. They can call the symphony at area code 302-656-7442. You can also reach us by email. Information is available for contact on the website. We do most of our tickets through the Grand Opera House, mm-hmm. so they can also purchase tickets that way. But certainly look up our website, which is something that we are also going to be working on in the not-too-distant future. The website needs a revamping, that's for sure.
So let's talk about the programming
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
what's coming up for people to enjoy and find out more about.
Sure. During this season, which was prepared long before I arrived, they wanted to tie the season to this set of bells. They call them the Bells of Remembrance. And these were bells that not necessarily were all made at the same time, but they were brought together and refurbished as necessary. Some of them were cast shortly after 9/11.
Oh.
There is a local Franciscan brother, David Schlatter, who was very close to a chaplain for the New York City Fire Department. And he was actually, he became the first victim of the 9/11 tragedy. And Brother David and the Franciscans in the area decided to memorialize this chaplain and others by amassing these sets of, and they're church bells. I mean, they're enormous bells. There are 13 of them. They're pitched.
Uh-huh.
And so David Amato and the leadership of the symphony thought, well, let's do programming that features bells. And of course, usually they'll just use a rack of chimes.
Right.
Which do an okay job, but the difference between a real church bell and a tubular bell is very striking. No pun intended. It's striking when you hear the two compared. So each of the classic series concerts will feature at least one work that has a prominent bell part in it. And we will have the appropriate bell up on stage, okay. or if it doesn't quite fit, backstage to be played. And we've had two classics concerts so far. And in each of them, there's been a bell. There were two bells the first concert, and most recently there was one bell. And, you know, as soon as that first note is struck, I mean, you can just look in the audience and, you know, the ears perk up some and people kind of raise in their seats a little bit. It's very impressive. We also have had bells outside in front of the performance venue.
Okay.
And the clapper's been, and rope has been attached. And so anybody on the street, I mean, it was funny, the very first concert at the Grand, we had, I call it Big Bertha. It's a 5,000-pound bell.
Oh,
it's
my
enormous.
Gosh.
They bring it in on a trailer, and you could hear this thing four blocks away. And people walking down Market Street would just ring the bell, and it was fantastic.
Well, that really adds a new unique dimension, too, to a symphony concert.
So
that's a special experience.
It does. And these bells are actually stored here, actually in Newcastle, at the airport.
Okay.
And so they're available. I'm thinking, well, you know, we don't have to stop this year. I think in the future, when we have need for a really prominent bell, we need to be in touch with Brother David.
So you've got a classical series, and then you have another series, chamber series.
Right. There's a chamber series that takes place in the Gold Ballroom at the Hotel DuPont, which for somebody who hasn't been in Wilmington very much, I mean, this was a great experience. It was like the second week my wife was here that we had our first chamber series concert. And it really feels like you're going back to royal times somewhere in Europe. The ballroom is spectacular. The acoustics are phenomenal. It's where we present repertoire for smaller ensembles.
Okay.
The opening concert featured the Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings with members of the string section of the DSO. And it's a very intimate, special environment.
Mm-hmm.
We can only fit 250, 300 people in the space. Mm-hmm. So they're very close to the music.
Mm-hmm.
The music just, you know, washes over you. And it's a wonderful opportunity. I mean, there's valet parking at the Hotel DuPont. People can come before, have dinner in the green room, go to the concert.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole package, and it's really a special thing. There are three more of those programs. The last Tuesday in January, I think it's the 26th, there are also programs in March and April.
Okay. And your artistic director and conductor, David Amato, is also involved more with some of the educational things as well, sort of with lectures and different things. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. He does a lot of different things. Certainly before all of our classics concerts, the full orchestra concerts, an hour beforehand, he will come out on stage and people, probably 100 to 200 people, come early for a musical discussion of the repertoire for the evening. But it also branches out beyond that. When we had Stuart Goodyear performing the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto, there was a lot of discussion with Stuart about, you know, how he prepares for the a performance, specifics about the Rachmaninoff. Actually, he also talked a little bit about the other piece on the program, Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, which was originally written for piano. And so he was getting the pianist's take on the orchestration of that repertoire. We also have started to incorporate a little Q&A into that, so it gives audience members an opportunity to ask questions that are burning. David is also conducting our Explorer concerts. These are the programs that last year we did two of them at the Grand for sold-out houses. It's a program that features Peter and the Wolf.
Okay.
And David will be conducting those in Milford and Schwartz in March.
And are those specifically for families, or are they for students?
Those are students. Daytime matinee programs.
Okay.
And so our education coordinator, Margie Ripson, is in touch with schools. And we've completely sold out the Schwartz Center concert already.
Oh, great.
Milford, there still is space available, and we would love to see some more schools sign up for that. That's March 16th of 2016.
Great. I know that you also offer master classes in conjunction with the Wilmington Music School or Delaware Music School.
That's correct. That's correct. Stuart Goodyear, pianist, did a master class recently. And then our final soloist of the year, Bella Hristova, violinist, will be doing a master class at the music school. And we're working with others to try and add master classes and other residency opportunities. We've had conversations with the University of Delaware. We've done some work with them in the past. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see that expand. Every year, the symphony presents an award to a living American composer or conductor. We're about ready to announce the winner for this season.
Oh, okay.
But I know that there's a composition class that happens at University of Delaware, and we're trying to coordinate something where the composer would come in and meet with those students, too.
Great. So are you finding Delaware organizations are willing collaborators with you?
Absolutely. Great. Absolutely. In fact, I think that's the only way the symphony can really rebuild its statewide reputation. Mm-hmm. We have a very small staff based in Wilmington. Some of us are somewhat unfamiliar with the area. And so we should be working with these other organizations, community organizations around the state. They have audiences. They have followings. They do their own presentations in many cases. And why not have the Delaware Symphony as part of their presentations?
Right, right. Well, that's an excellent way to look at it. And partnerships on both sides can benefit from those kinds of activities. So it sounds like you have some work cut out for you, but some exciting work.
It is. It's very exciting. I mean, this is, you know, it's a honeymoon period. And so I'm just kind of absorbing as much as we can. The board had set aside a strategic planning effort until the new director came in. And so now we're going full bore with that. We actually hope to have our strategic plan in place to unveil in February.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to... thank you for being here, Alan. We're at the end of our time, and I wish you the best of luck. And I've been speaking with Alan Jordan, who's the executive director of the Delaware Symphony. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.